Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I wanted to talk about the crocodile hunter.
Did you?
Because I think...
You're going to make him sad.
Because I think, you know, it was tragic at the time. But I think... I don't know, people calling me, man, they're shocked. Oh, hey, you wouldn't believe it, who got killed? The crocodile hunter.
Please don't make me laugh at this.
He was 44 years old. I'm like, that's a ripe old age for a crocodile hunter. And you know who had to be pissed about it were the crocodiles, because he got killed by some fruity fish. So the crocodiles were like, hey, man, that crocodile hunter got killed. Who did it, Frank? Nah, you don't even want to know, man.
Please don't do this anymore.
R.I.P. to Norm MacDonald, top of the hour, brought to you by DuckDuckGo. The comedian's comedian. Many people would say he was your favorite comedian's comedian because he just didn't care. I heard people talk about Norm, and they would say that the industry couldn't figure out what to do with him. Like, he had success as a stand-up. He obviously had success and notoriety from SNL and Dirty Work, a cult classic. But he never cashed in and made, you know, tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars like some of his comedic peers and people who you would say were as funny or that Norm was even funnier than, because people couldn't figure out the right vehicle for him, wasn't mainstream or that sort of thing. But the man was an absolute comedic genius who was fearless, Spiggs.
I remember there was a sitcom, right? There was a brief sitcom, I think The Norm Show.
Yeah, good title for it, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember they tried, but you're right, Danny. They couldn't figure out how to turn him into something like that.
And Netflix even tried. Like, Netflix gave him a little talk show.
Well, but Netflix tried to give him, you know, they tried to develop his Weekend Update persona into something. And he had his moments there. You ever see the bit about the Dougie dance when, like, the Dougie was going crazy all over the place and he, like, grabs six videos of people doing the Dougie and says, all right, let's see if we can figure out which person dancing the Dougie is going to get hit by an ice cream truck. And there's one guy who's doing the Dougie in the middle of the street. But he makes you wait while there's six other people doing the Dougie. And you're like, I don't know who it's going to be. And the guy gets hit by an ice cream truck. And, oh, God, it's unbelievable. But like, the crocodile hunter bit was what, 8 days after he went?
Ten days after he died, goes on The Daily Show and tells the joke about it's a ripe old age for a crocodile hunter.
Not just one joke, like seven jokes lined up in the bit, as you do.
We were just talking about things you turn to make you happy that you will rewatch, and Tanny said... And I haven't told Tanny this, so I'm going to tell this to Tanny on the air. And we both love Euchre and Norm MacDonald and Howard Stern. When I took off of Friday a couple of weeks ago and went to Brad's house, Brad and I spent the day together, just brothers one-on-one. His kids weren't there. My wife and son weren't there. It was just like we spent basically 6 hours together one-on-one, and it was – It was great, and it was meaningful, and it was after his recurrence and the whole thing. And Brad grew up and is a Brewers fan. His good friend is Craig Counsell. He knows a lot about Bob Uecker and Bob Uecker stories, but he had never seen the Norm clip. And after it had been a little bit of a serious moment, I played Brad the Howard Stern, Norm MacDonald, Artie Lang telling dirty Bob Uecker stories. And Brad was just cracking up. And we had a great laugh, and it broke some of the tension. Not that we needed, like, we couldn't break the tension ourselves, but, like, it was just like a good cathartic laugh and release through the beauty and brilliance of Norm MacDonald. But Tanny, I know he's on your comedy Mount Rushmore, man. So I am genuine. People reached out to me about Michael K. Williams. If I wasn't working with you when the news came across, I would have texted you immediately. So I have my condolences about Norm MacDonald.
Thank you. I did get several texts today, so everyone who reached out, thank you very much. It's literally too many to mention, so I'm grateful in that regard that people associate me with him in some way. It's kind of morbid, and but you know, I'm genuinely thankful people are reaching out to see how I'm doing, because it is a tough one, man, because we were down getting coffee, Shane and I, and thanks, Speaks, for buying coffee today, even though you're not here. That was very nice of you. Danny had the opportunity, turned it down.
Damn outrage.
So, you know, we were down there getting coffee, and then Bernstein texted me the story, and just, you know, crushed, because I had no idea. Like, no one had any idea about his illness. And then the radio producer brain starts kicking in, and I'm like, okay, what do I have now in the system currently? And so you're going through a mental inventory. I know I have that. I know I have that. So I race up here to put other stuff in there. So I haven't really had a chance to sort of process this. So this is going to be a really tough one. I think we always talk about who our favorite comedians are, like our favorite active touring comedians. And Norm is seldom on that list for me, because you know you don't get a chance to see him. He's not your typical comedian goes out touring my special now, and I'm gearing up for my special, so you can catch him once a year. So I always put him in a separate category, but I think he was easily my favorite comedian, and I'll tell you why. It's because there's a certain something about a guy who can make his peers laugh. And when your peers say that he's their favorite comedian, to make a comic laugh takes a specific type of brilliance in that world. And that's what I always admired most about him, is just him just walking on a stage or doing a radio show, like some of his stuff with you know, not even Howard Stern, but Dennis Miller, where he's doing a ventriloquist bit on the radio. You know, it takes a certain kind of just, you know, you have to be the man to go out there and do that. And just his appearance would just make people laugh sometimes, you know, when he goes on and does these radio hits or TV hits, the stuff with Conan and Letterman. So, like, there's that. And then you know, his book is one of the most brilliant books I've ever read. 2016 is based on a true story.
Great book.
Where he's weaving in and out of things that may possibly be true.
I haven't read it. I gotta read it.
Maybe grab the. I think he did the audio version himself. So I would check that out.
And
yeah.
So that was what spurred the topic of, if you listen to an audio book, can you say that you read the book? Because that was what spurred that topic. Because I listened to Norm MacDonald do his own audio book, and it was amazing.
Yeah, I think that counts, by the way. But Tanny, what you're talking about, though, why the comics loved him is, like, he had, like, all these extra levels of self-awareness and irony, because he knew the game, and everybody knew that he knew the structure of comedy better than anybody. So he'd do a joke on top of a joke, and everything was tongue-in-cheek, an extra level for the very best funny minds.
Yeah, it's true brilliance, right? And people talk about comedians that are fearless, just because you can go on stage and say something provocative or not scared to, you know, be printed on the internet the next day. But true fearless and being fearless in comedy is going up there without a real plan, or going up there with knowing something that you may be an absolute clunker, and just not caring, and just being you and being able to carry it. Like, you know, the Bob Saget roast, one of my favorite things.
So good.
He's going up there with jokes that he pulled from like a 1960s joke book, you know, when someone retires. You know, he's just saying those jokes and just reading them verbatim on stage, and people are like, what is this guy doing out there? You know, and the SBs.
Geraldo, he's with the birds.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
And he would lean into when he bombs. I retweeted something from a comic who knew him 30 years ago about Norm bombing and knowing he was going to bomb and just leaning in harder and harder and harder until he had to be escorted to his car at the end, because he was just so loathed by the end of the night.
And that's the way it should be. Yeah, but that book is great, because it takes you, like, the one true part of that book is the chapter on SNL and the behind-the-scenes stuff and talking about the writing process in terms of doing Weekend Update. So that's really great stuff. And I was fortunate enough a few years ago, I got to see him with my buddies Joe Dredge and Craig Miller. It was the only time I got to see him. He was at the Vic, and he was just outstanding. And I know you know, Scott and Davenport have reached out. His daughters are big fans, and they were there that night as well, I believe. But just a really bad loss that I don't think I've quite coped with yet. But I'm going to be doing lots of more deep dives. And that's the thing. Like, he's one of the great comedians of the social media era, because people are sharing clips today, left and right, like stuff that, you know, odds are there's going to be stuff that you've never seen before today. And it's kind of sad in a lot of ways, because a lot of people are going to get exposed to Norm MacDonald that weren't necessarily before. But
watch,
I think
all of them.
Watch all of them. Yeah.
All of them.
You may look at a clip and be like, oh, this is kind of long, but it's worth it. Like, you
it
know,
the Conan joke about the moth.
I've got that. Yeah, I think I may end the show with that today. But yeah, all this stuff. And, you know, the joke about the gray man, Albert Fish, from his podcast. It's an amazing story about a murderer. So, yeah, man, it's a tough one today for me.
And I want to say that someone just tweeted a quote from Norm about cancer, and I had not heard this, and I love that he said it this way, because, you know, like, having watched my mom battle pancreatic cancer for 6 months between diagnosis and death and fight her ass off, the verbiage of loses his battle with cancer has always freaking enraged me, because it's not a fair fight. You know what I mean? And you don't lose if you fight your ass off and you try, like Brad is doing right now. Come on. Like, you know, and like Norm apparently did. So Norm said this: I'm pretty sure, I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty sure if you die, the cancer dies at the same time. That's not a loss. That's a draw, says Norm MacDonald. Oh, and I love that. Because that's if he battled for 9 years, that's not a loss.
No.
That's a draw, because cancer died with him.
Yeah, I think that is beautifully put. The fearless part, first of all, I would say best talk show guest. Like, if, you know, late night guest. I mean, there's a reason why David Letterman's last show, he could have anybody. The last guest on Letterman ever, Norm MacDonald.
Like, yeah, he's like the, you know, if anyone is a student of the late night talk shows, he's like the Don Rickles of this time.
Correct.
Because, like, it was a guy that would just go out and kill every single time. You
Not
know?
Even promoting things. They would just bring him on to tell stories, tell jokes. Oh, someone canceled. Can Norm come over? And he would. And he'd rip the other guests, and he'd make fun of the hosts. And it was completely unscripted. No pre-interviews. And sports tie-in. Huge sports fan, huge sports gambler.
I just went to his Twitter feed, and it stops on July 16th. But everything around there is golf odds and Jay Crowder hitting a three for Phoenix in a crucial moment.
Oh, he would just randomly live tweet sporting events, but like, it wouldn't be Sunday at the Masters. He would live tweet like Thursday at the Valspar. Like, it was just this unbelievable running bit. And then he tells a gambling bad beat story that he said he had the over in a game. There was a walk-off grand slam. The four runs should have counted for the over, but they like mobbed him at first base, and the guy never rounded the bases, so they only counted the first run, and so he lost the money. I have no idea if the story was ever verified or if it was true or not.
Isn't that Robin Ventura's grand slam single?
And but just like, I don't know about the gambling part of it, if it actually paid out or not, or if he just like had like creative license for the joke. But it's just the like the living and dying with the sports fandom for him is so incredible.
Marin is really good. His episode with Mark Marin, which I'm sure he'll put up today, but beyond the paywall, he has a lot of great gambling stories in that, where you don't know how much of it is true, how much of it isn't, but it's so real. You're like, man, that's that has to be true because of just the nature of it and gambling and the addiction part of it. You know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely a problem gambler. There's no question that part was there were too many examples for it not to be true. But the fearlessness, man. Like, and part of it, you know, people who get more critical success, who host the late night talk shows, who do the big national commercials, who have, you know, movie deals with Paramount or Sony or whatever, that makes people more conservative and careful, because you don't want to lose it, and you've got such a huge, like, industry behind you. And so part of Norm's brilliance and fearlessness, I think, was his independence. Like, Don Olmeyer, I just finished the SNL book a couple weeks ago. Like,
Live from New York on Saturday night?
Yeah.
It's so good, man. The spoken word by Jim Miller.
Yes.
Not the Bears quarterback.
Yeah. But, so, yes, James Andrew Miller. Yeah, so good that he was able to he would keep telling the OJ jokes even though the president of NBC told him not to, like you mentioned, and continuing to go on and do it and do it and do it. Damn the repercussions, because his boss was the audience, and his justification was laughter.
So comedy, he was not comedy was the king. He was that's why he's a comics comic, because he's serving the comedy first before everything.
Yeah, so you're
after his week in London, O.J. Simpson was asked by a reporter why he hadn't spent Mother's Day with his children. A visibly annoyed Simpson replied, "Idiot, I didn't spend Mother's Day with my kids because I killed their mother."
Just relentless on OJ all the time.
So you knew it was coming. I remember tuning in live at the time being like, all right, when's the OJ joke coming? Just biding my time. Like, here it comes. I know it's coming.
I'm waiting for OJ to tweet today. I've got the tweet alerts even more so, a higher alert than usual. I would love for OJ to come out and just say something nice about him.
You would.
I met him one time. Funny guy.
From the golf course on video.
OJ outlived Norm MacDonald.
Artie Lang.
What kind of world is this?
Artie Lang outlived Norm MacDonald.
You would have got long odds on that.
Impossible. 1,000 to 1. Doesn't make any sense. But people are talking about his ESPYs monologue. That's another thing. He took a job, went to the ESPYs, roasted it, knowing that there was no chance he'd ever be invited back again. Like, cost himself a job for the jokes.
Because there's the opportunity. He's a sports guy, and they're like, we want you. And he's like, okay, you really want me? All right, let's serve comedy and see what happens. Yeah, man, any of those you want to mix in the rest of the way, my God.
I will take them all day. That is, if you go to a bit, like, or an appearance, Tanny. Like, if you could say what, and I know you'll play the moth joke at the end. Like, where would you start the rabbit hole? Like, where would you send?
Well,
people?
That's the beautiful thing about rabbit holes. They don't always start at a specific place. Once you get just YouTube, Norm MacDonald. You know, the ones that people don't talk about enough are the stuff with Dennis Miller. I think, you know, just
I'll have
because
to check that out.
That takes even more level of comic genius, because you're trying things out on radio. He's doing a phoner with Dennis Miller, and he's doing a ventriloquist bit over the phone, which is just totally absurd. And that's like, you could tell him and Dennis Miller had a thing, because he's laughing before he even gets into any of it. You know, like, that's some of my favorite stuff right there. But yeah, just. It sucks, man.
Great doing Burt Reynolds. Great doing Burt Reynolds on all the Celebrity Jeopardy skits, too, by the way.
Yeah, and that was right.
Killed
that.
As Burt.
Welcome back to Celebrity Jeopardy. Back again, Burt Reynolds in a commanding lead with $14.
Hey, check out the podium. Look at this.
Mr. Reynolds has apparently changed his name to Turd Ferguson.
Yeah, that's right. Turd Ferguson. It's a funny name.
Great. Let's take a look at the final board. Mr. Reynolds, what are you doing?
Yeah, I found this backstage, an oversized hat. It's funny.
No, it's not.
Sure it is. It's funny. It's funny because it's bigger than a normal hat.
I see that. Get back to your podium.
God, man. F cancer. Hate it so damn much. 61 years old. And just... going through that, like, and not really telling anyone, I can't even imagine.
Probably, I mean, you'd assume close family.
I know the statement suggested that it was very, very, very few people who knew. And based on some of the comedian reaction today,
that a lot of them didn't know.
It seems, you know, Jon Stewart, Jim Carrey, Adam Sandler, you know, just like the heaviest of heavy hitters are coming out, and no one is giving any indication that they knew. John Morosi will join us if he thinks the Sox are trending down from a national perspective, plus some other storylines from around the game. Then Joe Ostrowski, then Hub Arkish. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
Hey, John boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
Hello to a new adventure. Living my life in Michigan, my home state, surrounded by family and friends.
Columnist for MLB.com.
Please go, Gabriella, please. Buy via.
There
you go.
Did you just shoo your kids away in a foreign language and then lock the door behind them? Is that what
That's
just happened?
Precisely
there?
What happened. Yes.
Yeah.
Non sono sicuro.
But in Italian, it sounds much nicer. You know?
The content.
That's it. What's up, man?
Fox Sports Baseball contributor.
Yeah. Fox Sports Baseball God, John Paul Morosi.
I'm a God, not the God.
MLB Network Insider.
I'd like to thank all of those involved in the Open. So thank you to Tanny, who is one of the greats in the game at what he does. And also Shane is one of the greats of the game at what he does. How about that?
Now you're lying about Shane.
John Morosi.
I'm so happy, I can't lie to you. It's the best moment of my life. All the fans who are here supporting me, it means the world.
John Morosi with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Where the bottom of the hour is brought to you by DuckDuckGo. We'll talk to Joe Ostrowski in 15 minutes. We have Hub Arkish at 4 o'clock. Hub's got to let me publish a column in Pro Football Weekly. I'm sure he'll be thrilled when I remind him of that. But now our friend John Morosi joins us on the Circuit Resort and Casino Hotline. Circuit Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. JP, how you doing today, my friend?
Tutto va bene qui, tutto a posto. I'm very excited to be with you both, and I love the multilingual open again by Tanny. I got that right. Well done by Tanny. Thank you.
Yep. Although they are both greats in the game, and that has gone completely to their heads, so thank you so much for that.
Yeah, that is true.
JP, Shohei Ohtani's in town along with the Angels to play the White Sox. How could anybody rival him for American League MVP? How is this even possible that what Shohei Ohtani is doing, which has not been done really since even before Babe Ruth, if at all, and some of it is never done before, who's really a rival? I know who it is, but tell people why.
Right, Matt. Well, it's a very fair question, and I've actually come out on this point and said that if I had a ballot today, I would still vote for Ohtani. I will preface this entire discussion by saying that. I still think he is the front runner. However, this strikes at how you view the award. Do you care about team success? I am typically someone who does, who gives extra credit for a player vaulting his team into a competitive race in September and putting them into October. That matters to me. I know it's subjective, but it matters. I also think that you award bonus points when someone is doing something that literally has never been done in the history of the game. That's what Ohtani is doing right now. That's why I still have him number one. But Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a close second. He is leading the team right now, the Blue Jays, that no one wants to deal with in October because they have such a tremendous lineup top to bottom. So, yes, I've got Ohtani still number one, Vlad Jr. number two, and Vlad's teammate Marcus Semien, the original White Sox, number three. But it's not by nearly as broad of a margin as I would have thought. I would say that one versus two a month ago.
What vote? What awards do you have a vote for this year?
I knew you were going to ask that. I have the Cy Young and the Manager of the Year. So I'm doing my homework on both.
AL or NL?
AL, yes. I'm still an AL chapter member here in the great state of Michigan.
Okay, that's right. That's how it works. Okay, so Lance Lynn probably falling off your ballot. You got a Garrett Cole, Robbie Ray decision. What about Tony La Russa as AL Manager of the Year?
Interesting thought. And Danny, I think there's a pretty good case for Tony. There's also a case for Scott Service. Ironically, I do think somewhere on my ballot there's a thought for A.J. Hinch as well, given the work that he's done in Detroit. You look at how they've played since the beginning part of May. I do think there are probably some deserving Manager of the Year candidates on teams that are going to the playoffs. I think Dusty Baker has a very interesting case, too. It's amazing. If you would have told me that three or four years ago that we'd be having an AL Manager of the Year debate between Tony La Russa and Dusty Baker, much as we were having the debate about them on the NL side 20 years ago, we're having some of that same discussion right now. I also think Kevin Cash has a pretty good case. I am someone that right now, you're really getting me during the week where I really try not to, and I'm being honest here, for the awards that I'm going to vote on, I try not to really get into the numbers until right about now, because I never want to have a prejudgment on how I felt about things for a long time. I do think for Lynn, and I did note this, of course, he has come back from the IL and pitched very well in his first start back. The question is going to be, can Lynn, with all the time he's missed, can he make up enough ground on Robbie Ray to tip the scales in his favor? I think that, to your point, Danny, probably right now the top two candidates are Ray and Cole, but there's still a couple good weeks of baseball left, and I try not to prejudge things until the final game of the season is played.
John, we're watching the White Sox coast awkwardly to the finish here as Tony La Russa manages all sorts of issues, the rest issues and injury issues and stuff like that, just trying to be healthy and ready for the playoffs when they come. What is the national perception of this team in terms of their ability to be at their best when the playoffs come and make a push?
Well, it's an important question, Matt, because obviously, as you point out, this is a team that has been, we've known they're going to win the division since the first part of June, maybe even earlier than that, when you consider how the division has played out. And so it's hard. It's hard to stay sharp when you have that large of a division lead. The one thing you could say for the White Sox is that Tony has certainly kept himself busy with figuring out, as players come back from the IL, how they integrate into the larger mix, especially with the everyday lineup. Grandal missed the time. Now Grandal is back. Robert missed a huge chunk of the season. Now he is back, and you could arguably say, since Robert has returned, he might be their best position player. He has been that good since he's come back. And now, of course, today Tim Anderson comes back. We want to get a look at him and see how he is doing and really where he fits in from a standpoint of rest for the balance of the year. I still think he is, in so many ways, the catalyst of this team. You think back, and I was actually just writing a piece today about the Field of Dreams game and what an incredible moment that was. We have seen Tim Anderson on the big stage making a huge play in that game, which still resonates, I think, for a lot of us still to this day. So I think getting him back and seeing how much his legs are impacted going forward is going to be a key part of the White Sox season. And, of course, getting Giolito back as well. So I think for Tony and the coaching staff guys, I think they just want to make sure that they're as healthy as they can be. And honestly, to have to figure out the rhythm of a team where you've got some comings and goings isn't really the worst thing in the world, because it's kept you sharp and kept your mind, I think, engaged with how to make this the best group of 26 players you can make it as you enter the playoffs.
John Morosi, MLB Network and Fox Sports, is our guest. He's always kind enough to join us in our Twitch stream as well. We'll talk to Joe Ostrowski in 10 minutes, Hub Arkish, at 4 o'clock. The Giants were the first team to clinch, and I feel like perception is, yeah, but the Dodgers are better. Are you buying the Giants as a singularly great team in the sport this year?
They're having a great season, Danny. They are not, in my judgment, a great team yet. We'll have to see how they play out in October. I'm not going to call them a great team now. Yes, they're the first to clinch. I think here's the funny part. If we got to a five-game series or a seven-game series between the Dodgers and the Giants, I think 90% of prognosticators would say the Dodgers should win that series. But you have a situation right now where the Giants are still in first place, and the Dodgers have a lot of work to do if they want to catch up to them and win the division. All that being said, if the Dodgers win the wild card game and get in and play the Giants in a five-game series, people like me would probably still say the Dodgers are the favorites. But they have to get there. And you never know who they're going to have to face. Much like Matt's question about the White Sox and how they've had such a comfortable lead, the Dodgers, if they finish second, will have to deal with a team that has had a very emotional finish, found a way to get in. Maybe even they had to win let's say it's a Reds-Cardinals tie, and one of the teams had to win a one-game playoff just to get in, and they're now playing relaxed. They would have just won a huge game, and then they play that team in the wild card game. Even if you do have a Scherzer on the mound, or a Buehler, or a Kershaw, or an Urias, take your pick of your Dodger ace for the day, it's still going to be an uncomfortable game for the Dodgers because they have to win that game. There's so much pressure on the defending champs. So I think, Danny, it's a great point. I'm a believer that the Dodgers are still a more talented team than the Giants, but the Giants are still in first place. And if the Dodgers are the second place team, they're going to have to play a very nervy wild card game to get into that first round series against the Giants.
No respect for the Giants, who are the first team to get to 70 wins,
first team to get to 90 wins,
first team to clinch. But no, I hear you. But overall, what's to be learned from the Giants being here with their mid-30s veterans playing up to the level of their contracts? All of them, Crawford, Belt, right, Posey, hell, even Longoria. It's just all of them are playing that well. Meanwhile, Chris Bryant is there. The Cubs just decided not to pay any of their veterans into their 30s and instead traded them all. It's easy to look at Buster Posey and think, well, there but for the financial grace of the Cubs, there goes Chris Bryant. You know, like they could have gone down that road and had Chris Bryant withstand a couple years and still be good the next time they're good, but they chose not to do it. What's to learn from the way the Giants have done?
No, some great points there, Matt. I think the number one, there are no two ownership situations that are similar. I think that obviously we have seen the Cubs make decisions in the last couple years that have been oriented toward saving money when possible, and that's their right. It's a business. I think if they had wanted to fall in love with their core players and extend them all, they probably could have, but obviously that's a lot of money, and they've made a business/baseball decision to not do that. I think of all the players there, and Matt, you mentioned how well Bryant has played there, and we saw the reception he got at Wrigley. I think for Bryant, understanding he played through injury last year and looking at how versatile of a player he is and how he fits your club in so many different ways, I think he's the player for me that stings a little bit to not have him signed long-term with the Cubs, because he would not have locked you in. I think with Baez, you have worries about the low contact rate. He still strikes out too much. He's played better with the Mets the last couple weeks, but I still worry about the low contact rate. Rizzo is basically playing one position. But Bryant, you could put him around really at probably four different positions if you wanted to. You could play him at first, third, and either corner outfield spot. And I think that's where, goodness, for a player who has always hit that well when healthy, you would have liked to have seen him have a spot on this roster long term. And I think he's probably the one, if I'm being honest, the Cubs are going to have to answer questions about the longest in the future to say, how is he not on this team?
John Morosi, MLB Network, Fox Sports. Shane Reardon and the Odyssey softball team finished second last night.
Wow.
In a 16-inch softball league after starting the season with 10-plus errors in their first game.
Wow.
It was a... You played to seven innings. You guys went to the 11th inning, right?
Yeah, so extras into the 11th last night.
Extras into the 11th. Wow. Shane Reardon was an all-star. He was the captain. He was the manager. He was the general manager. And he was the consensus best player on the team. My question for you is second place something to be proud of, or are they merely the first loser?
First of all, when you have a trophy that incorporates a PBR can, it is always worth celebrating. That's number one.
Okay.
Number one. And number two... You certainly should celebrate that. And number three, I'm going to have to work through my contacts with the Gregerson family to see if we can get some sort of plaque to really honor your achievement at the 16-inch Softball Hall of Fame in suburban Chicago. As we know, Luke Gregerson's late father, Duke Gregerson, is one of the all-time greats in 16-inch softball, and Duke... it has been honored at the Hall of Fame, and I should really circle back with Luke and see what we can do there to make sure that Shane's team is properly honored at the 16-inch Softball Hall of Fame in the suburban Chicago.
That's where the game was last night, John. We played it at the Forest Park 16-inch Softball Hall of Fame.
At the Hall of Fame.
At the Hall of Fame.
That is awesome. Now, my understanding is that the Forest Park 16-inch Softball Hall of Fame is still open 2 days a week. Is that correct?
More than that. It's 7 days a week. And George Bliss is there all the time.
If you'd like, we could arrange a private tour. We know people. We know Gio and George, who are in charge over there.
Put them in the Hall of Fame! Put them in the Hall!
I love that.
I called the game last night, JP. I called the game, and my son was a bat boy, and Shane was played in the All-Star game before the big game, and Danny watched five innings of softball on a live stream.
I love
tonight.
This, man. This Danny. Now, Danny and Matt, you are both great teammates. That is an outstanding... teammate of the year. That's
he's right.
You know,
right.
We talked about the Giants. Full marks to them. They have the Willie Mack Award, the best teammate of the year, in the honor of the Willie McCovey Award. I think we should have maybe it's the Danny Parkins Award, maybe it's the Matt Spiegel Award, but there is a best teammate of
the Danny Parkins
of the
Award.
Okay.
Yeah, the Danny Parkins Award that goes to Danny Parkins. You're right. I'm the real MVP. That's a good point. Thank you, John Morosi. That's an excellent point. I've always liked you.
I gave my child to the cause. What are you talking about?
But I watched it on a live stream from my couch. JP, we'll talk to you soon, my friend. Thank you.
I love it. I'll save all my Lions jokes for next time, okay?
Yeah, nice onside kicks.
There you go.
That was a cute little comeback.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
That's John Morosi. What did we learn from week one, and why the hell are the Bears favored over the Bengals? Joe Ostrowski next on The Score.
This guy is a machine. All he does is work out and pick winners.
Joe Ostrowski.
We couldn't live without Joe Ostrowski.
That being said, I hate Joe Ostrowski.
So, Ostrowski?
My friend of mine is very smart, said I've been very lucky with gambling. I've never won.
Joe Ostrowski with Parkinson Spiegel on 670 The Score.
And our conversation with Joe O, brought to you by PointsBet. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino hotline in Las Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino, home of the world's largest sportsbook and the home of our broadcasts for Bears and Raiders. Joe O, what?
Guys, what? I got to tell you, yeah. I was more locked in your hour of recap and react of last night's softball game than I have been in any Cubs or White Sox game this season.
That's awesome.
Was beautiful. And Danny, like, usually I trust you when it comes to broadcasting. I did not hear AA level from Gio. I heard Pat Benkowski doing sports trivia. Like, what? He's AA level?
I admittedly was not sober last night while I was taking it in. But Joe, he's standing at third base, operating the camera and keeping score and doing a solo broadcast with no commercial breaks and keeping it going. I was impressed.
Oh, I didn't know he was standing at third base.
Yeah, dude, you got to watch it. He's on the field operating the camera and doing the broadcast at the same time. Like, I would say, given all of the conditions, I was very, very impressed.
So that ball was in no man's land. Cody Westerlund double-cocked.
What?
Runner did not need to slide there.
Yeah, and it had a disdain for the level of play, like, because he's a softball Hall of Famer. I enjoyed every bit of it.
And he sounds a lot like a Bob. He sounds like yes. One of ours.
That's,
you know?
That's the other thing. His voice is very endearing.
He's either blind or out of his mind.
Joe, why are the Bears favored against the Bengals?
This is one of four times that the Bears are favored this season. So the Bears are 3-point favorites. The Bengals now are juiced, so we've had some Cincinnati money come in, so maybe that comes off the three down to 2.5. As we know, Bengals won last night. With a lot of these week one results, I wonder, was it about the winner or about the loser? That Cincinnati-Minnesota game may have been more about the Vikings. I mean, their offensive line had 11 penalties. The Bengals were only 3-for-14 on third down. I still don't know how they won that game. Are the Bengals better? I don't think so. And so they're at home. The books are giving the Bears the edge there. So I think that's why. They're favored against Detroit twice, Cincinnati, Giants at the end of the year. So that's the list.
Did you learn anything from the overall first week, the whole slate, in terms of trends overall to look at into week two, or is it a week-to-week league as it usually is?
It is a week-to-week league, but as far as week one goes, the recap is the books crushed it. They dominated bettors. I did well because I typically play underdogs. Underdogs went 12-4 against the spread. 9 of them won outright. 9 underdogs won, a lot of them on the road. Dolphins, Chargers, Steelers, Eagles, Cardinals. I was thinking about the conversation, Danny, we had a few weeks back. I don't recall if Spiegs was in, but just about the road teams.
Yes.
It just doesn't matter that much anymore. And we have fans in the stadiums. It did not matter much in week one.
What do you think happens to the gambling market around the Packers?
I think they're going to see what happens on Monday.
If they blow out the Lions, it'll be stable and they'll be treated like it was an anomaly. But if it's close or obviously a loss, they get downgraded significantly.
I do think they reacted to what we saw against New Orleans. If the Packers were competitive, not even if they won, if they were just competitive in that game, it's probably higher than the 10.5 it's at right now. I was talking about this on the show yesterday. Is it crazy if we can assume that Justin Fields will be out there very soon, and we hope that happens. The division looks terrible, and you can find the Bears at +650. If you're going to assume a win here, they've got Detroit in week four. We know it gets bad later, but if Fields is out there, he can cover up a lot of the issues on this team. +650 in a terrible division, and they're tied for first right now.
Joe, the defense is real bad, man.
It's real bad. I know.
I think Cincy is better. I think Burrow's legit. I think he's got a few pass catching options that are legit in Higgins and Chase. Plus, Mixon is obviously great. I think their D line is real. I think Cincy's winning outright on Sunday, and I think it's going to be real ugly at Soldier Field. Personally,
oh, man, talk about a matchup of offensive coaches there. Zach Taylor against Matt Nagy.
Yeah, it's going to be thrilling stuff.
Joe, I don't know if you saw that The Athletic unveiled a whole new like predictive metric for football, their version, I suppose, of DVOA or what have you. And they obviously found a guy who crunches all the numbers, and he compared it to, like, I think it was 90 different predictive tools if you look at its history over the last couple years, and only one was better than this vaunted model that they were putting out there. And you know what it was? It was the Vegas lines. It was the only one. Everybody else's predictive system was like wildly all over the place. And they were like, look at our new system. Oh, by the way, Vegas does better than everybody. How is that?
That is not a surprise here. Danny, did you notice with the week two lines, they gave us a total of zero teaser legs?
Oh, yeah. Dude, crushing. Yeah. Teasers, I look for them every week. Where can I tease 7-3? They came in last week, but no, we're not getting them this week. Tough slate this week. And you're right, dogs crushed, but a pretty benign week for survivor pools because the big favorites all came through.
You know what? You would think that because all three favorites of more than a touchdown all won. But for example, in the survivor pool that I run, that you're in,
yeah,
we got over 600 entries, over 100 out.
Really?
Yes.
I just assumed.
No, you would think. People were getting too cute. I'm going to take the Vikings. I'm going to take the Jaguars against the Texans. I'm going to take the Bills, the six and a half point favorites against the Steelers, and they're done.
Okay. I guess I'm wrong. Joe Ostrowski, BetQL Daily, host of BetQL Daily on behalf of PointsBet. Thank you, sir. We'll talk next week.
Do you have 30 seconds for a Norm MacDonald story?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So a few years back, I'm doing a sports betting podcast with Sam Panionovich, and we get Artie Lang on the show, just telling a bunch of gambling stories. So he brings up Norm. They had a weekend, let's say that, in Atlantic City. So they go to the ocean, and Norm's got this bag. It's like, what are you doing? Throws it in the ocean. Norm, what is in that bag? He tossed $60,000 into the ocean. Why, Norm? Why would you throw $60,000 into the ocean? Well, I just wanted to get it over with before I lose it all NFL season.
God, he's the best. Yeah. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, guys. Talk next week.
That's Joe Ostrowski. Hub Arkish thinks Matt Nagy needs to change his responsibilities. We will talk about my upcoming column that he will publish and promote. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.